Welcome to Ufahamu Africa, a podcast about life and politics on the African continent. I'm Rachel Beatty Riedel, one of your hosts. And this week we have an excellent episode by non-resident fellow Kamogelo Telede about social media and politics. It's largely focused on South Africa, and her two guests are experts on the South African political scene. But certainly social media and politics has broader implications for the rest of the continent and the globe. So take a listen and learn from these esteemed experts. I wanted to share two quick announcements before we go to this episode. And the first is about Ufahamu Africa and that we are relaunching our essay writing competition for this year. So we're accepting one-page reflection essays on any topic related to life and politics on the continent. And we encourage instructors, professors, teachers to assign the essay competition to your classes and share with individual students. Anyone who's out there who's listening and not related to a class, just send in your essay competition directly to us. You'll see the call on our website, ufahamuafrica.com, and winners will have a chance to read their essay on a future episode of the podcast, as well as receive great swag from our team. The second announcement I wanted to share with our listeners is about a Constitution summer school. Constitution Building in Africa. It's hosted by the Central European University and sponsored by Open Society Network and several other grant funders and foundations. And the goal of the postgraduate and postdocs, academics are all welcome to work on the field around Constitution Building. Lawyers, of course, are welcome, but so are political scientists, social scientists with an international relations background, anthropologists, etc., to engage in this interdisciplinary study around constitution making, building, and constitutional reform. So really a great opportunity. We'll post the link to that on our website as well. And you can also Google Constitution Building in Africa, CEU for Central European University. So take a look at that for those who are interested. And now listen in to our conversation with Kamo. Thanks so much.
Sanbonani Ufahamu Africa listeners, my name is Kamogelo Dinyeko Teledi and I'm the non-resident fellow for 2022-2023. On today's episode, we'll be looking at the role of social media and its influence on election campaigns in South Africa. We'll also be looking at the 55th ANC conference that was held last year in December and looking ahead at the 2024 general elections. Now, in the US in the early 2000s, the impact of social media campaigns, especially during the campaign of former President Barack Obama, was huge. Now, according to Pew Research Center, around 74% of internet users sought election news online during Obama's first campaign. That's representing a 55% of the entire adult population at the time. Now, fast forward to 2016 in South Africa, the ruling party, the African National Congress, spent about 50 million rand on a covert campaign targeting opposition parties in the local government elections. Now, according to investigative journalist Ama Bungane, the covert team, initially known as the War Room, intended to disempower the Democratic Alliance and EFF campaigns and set a pro-ANC agenda using a range of different media strategies, but mostly social media. At this point, traditional election campaigns were slowly losing their impact on voters, and political parties had to find a way to strengthen their social media presence in order to sway voter sentiment. Now, for the War Room, this included a chat show, it included a news site, it also included, like I had mentioned, influencers on social media. In 2019, in our general elections, President Cyril Ramaphosa took part in Instagram live interviews with certain celebrities in order to motivate voters to go out and cast their vote. Post the COVID-19 pandemic, it's without a doubt, social media has become a force to be reckoned with regarding elections globally. Now, influencers and artists are roped in into campaigns and millions of rands are spent yearly. Now, to unpack this further, I am joined by brand reputation management expert Solly Mueng, who is joining us from Switzerland. And in our studio in Johannesburg, I'm joined by seasoned social media and digital specialist, Stembiso Sithole. Thank you for joining us, gentlemen, and welcome to Ufahamu Africa.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm happy to be here.
Let's start with you, Soli. Now, looking at the 2019 general elections, did the move by President Cyril Ramaphosa to rope in celebrities and artists work to the betterment of his election campaign?
Well, I think we need to look at two things. One, first of all, you do need to be on social media because it's a way to reach out to as many people as possible, especially if you understand what platforms people use. It's one thing to reach out to people. It's a different thing to say, am I being credible? So you can reach them. You can reach out to those people. It doesn't mean that the messages are going to change their attitude towards who you are, what you represent. If there are too many other things happening in the environment that make it hard for them to believe what you have to say. But did the ANC use it? Of course, the Ramaphosa used it. Everybody's using the EFF used social media platforms to reach out to people. But to what extent they managed to change the views of all those people is a different matter.
Now let's unpack that. Does it work to the betterment of political parties to use such a strategy, especially if they're using very popular faces like your celebrities, your influencers? Has it proven to be effective?
Well, in a country where there are many people who are too lazy to read long documents, where slogans and headlines can sway people, where there are so many people who are gullible, of course it will. There's always a section of the voter market, as it were, that will be swayed by using sexy people, interesting social influencers, as you say, to try to get them aligned with the messages coming from a specific political party. I think not using social media platforms is not an option for anybody.
Like I said, now we're moving post the pandemic, and social media is going to play a very critical role coming next year in our 2024 general elections. But as an artist, if I'm roped in by, like you mentioned, the EFF or the ANC, does it work to my benefit, especially if certain parties have been implicated in certain scandals or may not align with my views? Branding-wise, how does that look for an artist or an influencer to affiliate themselves with a political party?
Yeah, I love that question. I really do. I think that artists must be mindful of their own brand reputation. There's no doubt about it. And the associations they make between themselves and others, out the other brands, whether it's political brands, corporate brands, that might be discredited, might bring a lot of harm to themselves. And especially if those other brands are doing harm in their own space, it means that you then get associated with them. The reputation of your brand doesn't stop at your door. It also goes throughout your value chain, as it were. Your value chain involves people that you do business with, people that you hang out with. You can't be hanging out with people who rape or who are involved in GBV and say, but I'm not doing that. So you need to be absolutely clear that the brands that you associate with are the ones you are proud to associate with, and that they enhance the credibility of your own brand instead of taking away from it.
Thank you, Soli. Stembiso, to you, right? The 55th National Conference of the ANC in December, we saw a lot of factions play out on social media. Did that impact at all President Cyril Ramaphosa's unity and a renewal project in any sense?
Thanks for the opportunity once again to really invite me and Soli in this conversation. I think one, we need to get the fact that it's no secret that social media is dominating and everyone is out there really finding ways to express their views and what they think. Particularly when it comes to the politics, you saw there, like you correctly said, there were different views in terms of who should be taking over, who should be part of the top six then before we knew it was going to be the top seven.
Yeah.
But at the same time, those narratives, of course, people were pushing their own agendas and between. But to answer a question, you saw then later on, even if there were those mixed views, some of them were damaging because other people were personal, you know. But you recall the likes of the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, the ANC president, in his capacity, he has never actually lambasted anyone on social media. I mean, some of the candidates that he was really contesting with. But amongst the supporters, among themselves, of course, they'll ridicule each other, you know, they'll say negative things. But then at the end, it's a matter of them finding ways to work together. But in terms of, did that have a huge huge impact in terms of the renewal. You saw the tone from those, the likes of Mdolo, Big Mdolo from KZN, who simply said, we're just campaigning. The campaign now is over. You know, we are now united and really working hard to find ways to make things happen. And I think it's expected in any political parties, even in the AFF and the DA, where when people are contesting, they will have those mixed views on social media, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're not seeing eye to eye. We've seen also with the former president, Jacob Zuma, with President ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa shaking hands, but on social media, it was a different conversation amongst those who support the parties.
So are we saying that our social media world and our actual political world are worlds apart? Like, they're not catching up with each other. So, like you mentioned, Big Mdolo, who's the chairperson of the African National Congress in KwaZulu-Natal, can easily say what happened on social media was just purely campaigning. We're still part of the party. We still support the president. So are you saying in political parties, campaigning on social media is not really taken in terms of what's actually happening within the party itself?
It's in twofold. There's a possibility that that's the sentiment, that's what's happening on the ground in the party. Another sentiment could be just playing for the social media gallery, you know, when I elevate the brand, still be out there. You've seen in other political parties where, when it comes to the DA, where the so-called black DA leaders have left the party. Before they left the party, they will express their views, talking about the ill treatment that they experience in the party, and then later on, subsequently, we see them resign, you know, and in between, then one can't turn a blind eye to say, oh, actually, that didn't take place because they're expressing themselves on social media. We've seen also with the likes of Mbali, Van Damme also expressing themselves about the party, those forth and back conversations. So in some instances, yes, that's okay, but in other cases, like we've seen in the ANC, it's just one of those where we just, of course, pushing that agenda at that particular time and then being mature about it and moving forward.
Now, sticking with the conference, there was 24-hour media coverage covering everything. However, one thing that turned out was that more people were following the conference through social media than they were watching our mainstream traditional media forms. Even your channels would have a huge social media presence during such a time. Are we relying more now for our news intake on social media than our traditional media forms?
That's really interesting. I was in Nazareth, 24 hours. They would wake up there, you know, do their work, sleep late, and all of that. You are correct that a lot of people were on social media, particularly those who are non-delegates, because you'll recall that those who were in Nazareth were the media, were the journalists, and of course, in between, those who were actually given access to cover the conference and the delegates themselves. So a lot of people relied on journalists, you know, particularly the SABC platforms, to really get in terms of what's happening there on the ground. And then, of course, the media houses were there with their platforms in between. But it's correct to say, like Soli was saying earlier on, that people like to read short text, you know, they want to just get the highlight and the summary. So they were using social media just to get the latest blow by blow in between. And then the next day, they'll just read those articles. But for blow by blow, just for the minute. You remember when the president, former President Jacob Zuma, arrived a bit later, the cheers and all of that. People wanted that immediate reaction, what is taking place. So you are correct to say a majority of the people were tuned in on social media.
Now, we're building up to the 2024 elections, and I'm sure political parties are starting their campaigns. How important is now the branding of a party in the build-up to those elections? How critical is it to build a social media branding right now as a campaign?
It's critical, but at the same time, speaking from as a social media specialist, it's very important to have a solid content plan in terms of what messaging are you sending to the people out there. Right now in the country, fortunately, our lovely colleague is not experiencing load shedding, right? But South Africans here, that's one of the main things, to simply say, we have seen you using social media, we've seen you campaigning, but this time around, what is it that you are promising to deliver? So that's a kind of a messaging that the political parties must then find strategies to communicate with the voters, to simply say, what's the best way that you're going to communicate? What messaging are we sending? But at the same time, being available to respond to the people. And you'll know that this is the time whereby they'll be visible on social media and all of that. But the question is, what is it that you're saying on social media? And what promises are you making? And can you also be held accountable? At the same time, it's no secret we have seen other political parties being active, like the EFF, where basically they're simply saying, notify us if there are lack of service delivery issues in your area, and of course we'll come attend to that in between. So they're using social media in that platform. Now going back to 2024, I mean going to the elections, it would be interesting to see what messaging are they now saying, with given the challenges that we're facing when it comes to load shedding, water, and of course the issue of FISMA's fall. As we all know, that it's February. Once again, we're yet to witness that.
Now I just want to rope both of you guys in at this moment. What we saw in 2021 in July with the unrest, majority of that unrest started bubbling on social media until it obviously spilled over into actual on our streets. Soli, what do you think when campaigning comes for 2024, what are the biggest societal issues that are likely to come to play amongst voters, and what should parties be rather, how would they deal with that in terms of their branding? For instance, the ANC that has been in power for over 20 years, and we're facing load shedding, we're facing high unemployment, we're facing high increase, a very high living cost of living. How would they position themselves in terms of issues that are faced by the voters?
I don't know how the ANC can position itself. I mean, all of these issues that you're mentioning are real issues for many South Africans. I mean, not me in South Africa right now, but I have family, I have friends in South Africa. I want to come back home. I teach online, but I'm afraid that if my students are sitting in around the world in different time zones, if I come to South Africa, I must first make sure that I reinforce the electricity supply in my home. But even my friends who have all sorts of batteries and stuff are still going through. I cannot afford to be there and not be able to teach. You know what I'm saying? So it's a serious issue for many South Africans. Many small businesses have been affected by load shedding. We know that it's, and now water issues are becoming an issue as well in South Africa. And unemployment, lots of livelihoods have been destroyed. So the social media is just a platform. The ANC and other political parties must use it, and they will use it, of course, to try and sway the hearts of people in their favor. But many, I think less and less South Africans are going to be fooled by this. I've seen people respond on social media platforms at messages being given by Fikile Mbalula, for instance, and other spokesmen of the African National Congress, laughing at them, telling them, look, you're not fools anymore, get out of here. So social media platforms can be used to try and win hearts, but they can also be used by the hearts that you're trying to win to tell you that you're being stupid, get out of here. And we see that happening in South Africa. The road towards 2024 is going to be treacherous. There are indications that Russia and China are working with the African National Congress. We've seen what Russia tried to do in helping, trying to help Donald Trump to win elections in America. It's not in the interest of China and Russia to see the ANC lose elections in South Africa. Those guys are smart. They know how to play this game. And these war rooms that you referred to first, they will be helped. And indications are that they're already playing with African National Congress. So it's just a matter of just sending messages. But it's also undermining, and you also referred to this earlier, which is a very important thing. They will use social media to try and use sports and other individuals to undermine individuals and messages being sent out by other political parties. So it's going to be very treacherous. But it's just social media, just a platform. It doesn't just determine tone, really. It's how you use it.
And I like that. Stimby, yeah. So for you, what do you
think? No, definitely. I agree with you. And we must not forget, when you speak of social media, talking about Twitter, talking about Facebook, talking about WhatsApp, and Twitter is just a small portion of those who have access to it. Facebook, we still dominate in our country, and a lot of people there, they use it because it's accessible to them. But most importantly, it's because they can comfortably express themselves. And at the same time, going to the elections, we are now going to see citizens themselves pointing out potholes, walking physically to see them saying, we have pit toilets, you've promised us this, you know. So that's what we'll be seeing in between. But then again, there's a biggest chunk that we must not forget. The people in rural areas still love that ruling party. They'll still vote for that ruling party in between. So what does that mean? Does that mean, do they have voice on social media? They might not have a voice, you know. There are those, of course, who might wish that the EFF be in power. There might those who might wish that UTM must be in power in between. But then it's how you use the platform. But the question that we should be asking ourselves, do social media sentiments translate to actual votes? As you have seen in Nazareth, where the likes of Dr. Mzweli Mkhize's campaign in between, those were campaigning for him, the likes of Lindiwe Sisulu, and before, you know, even those who were in support of Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, they were using social media to really push that narrative. But did that translate when it comes to the delegates in between, when it comes to voting? You know, we are looking to the EFF march that's going to be taking place this month, if I'm not mistaken, where the EFF is using social media and other platforms to mobilize people to simply say, let's go there on the ground, let's go march against load shedding, whatever issues that they're not happy with. But the question is, to what extent do those protests have when it comes to effectiveness, in terms of practicality, in terms of solutions, you know, and all of that. And also in between, like Soli was saying, on whose interest are this march for? You know, one would ask, you know, correct, if I'm selling tomato and I get 400 rand a day, today I'm required just to shut down and go participate in that march. Who's going to give me that 400 rand to take care for my kids, you know? So those are some of the conversation that our people are having. I mean, for an example, even with the DA, the march that took place recently, other people are simply saying, yes, it was all good, but it was screaming headlines for the DA. But what about me? I'm still back in that squatter camp. Load shed.
And I like that. I think we always seem to forget when we're on social media that we're still facing a huge divide in our country between the have and the have-nots. And it continues to increase as long as we continue having high rates of unemployment and the high cost of living. And you just touched on something, that what happens on social media does not necessarily translate into the actual voter turnout. Is that people I've been seeing a lot of sentiments, and maybe you can speak on this, Soli, is that a lot of people, especially young, the youth, are saying on social media, we need to vote. We need to go out in 2024 and vote out this government. But analysts are saying that we're likely going to go into a coalition government. Now, these sentiments on social media, are people just saying it for talk because we're frustrated at load shedding, we're frustrated at the water cuts, or are we likely to see a change if the youth is on social media actually goes out?
Look, we know that there's an increasing number of South Africans who have given up on voting. Many of them will tell you that they voted before, they don't see the need for it because nothing changes. The ANC has been in power not just over 20 years, but almost 30 years. It'll be 30 years next year. It's a very, very long time. Some of these young people who are voting perhaps for the first time next year have never seen South Africa not being governed by somebody else. All they know is the African National Congress, but they know what they want, and they're very angry because I've seen posters of you know people saying, well, you know, my parents were promised this, I'm here for a refund, you know, why should I be continuing the same journey as my parents? So many people, well, people have to vote. I mean, it's one thing to express your anger on social media. It's a different thing to go and vote. But it doesn't stop there. I interviewed not too long ago the former deputy commissioner of the Electoral Commission, which some people call it the independent. I don't think it's an independent Electoral Commission. So we shouldn't believe that every outcome of the results that we have seen, even in the past, has been a true reflection of South Africa's voters. South Africans speak too little about the IEC, what happens ahead of elections, what happens during elections, what happens immediately after elections, who controls, who builds, who prints the ballot papers, who controls the IT system, who runs the IEC. Those people have been mapped. The use of SATU people to run voter stations, all of that stuff South Africans have to focus on. So it's not just people must express themselves, which they do, which they will anyway on social media. It's also, will they, those people, also go to vote, and will their votes be counted accordingly, properly, without manipulation by people who control the IEC? All of that stuff is important in South Africa.
And you just touched on that we cannot trust the IEC. Why is that? Why can't we trust the Independent Electoral Commission that has been in charge of our election for over 20 years? What is it that voters should be very wary of?
Look, the Independent Electoral Commission uses SATU teachers to run a lot of voter stations are in schools. And those school principals are made voter, you know, they're given the responsibility of those voter stations. They determine where, how the voting ballots are going to be taken after that, who the transportation by the SAPS, all of that stuff. Look, if you, I mean, maybe separate to this, I will send you the link to the invitation to the interview I did with Tsiritsilane, who was kicked out, who was insulted by people like Gwitimantashe and the lady, what's the lady who died, who was Deputy Secretary General of
Jesse
Duarte, for not playing the game. This man is in hardcore, he has always been a hardcore ANC person, but at that point he said, guys, we can't keep doing this. They wanted them to do something. And he can tell you that elections have been stolen, have been rigged by the African National Congress. And so this is not a myth, okay? So, but the things a lot of South Africans have too blindly trusted the IEC. How can you have one of the parties contesting elections controlling also the voters? This is happening all over Africa. It should stop. So it's important that we have a conversation about the use of social media. It's important that we also urge people to go and vote, because that's the only way to get to change, you know, to participate, you know, actively in the democracy. If you want to change, of course, things. People have to not just moan, they must vote, but you must also know that when they do vote, the outcome of the vote is a true reflection of their voter sentiments, which it cannot be if the IEC cannot be trusted to do the right thing.
And you just spoke about Africa, right? And before we come back to South Africa, I just want us to branch out a bit in terms of expression. We have a wide audience listenership. We have different, I am part of a fellowship with different students from different parts of Africa. And how we use social media, we're very free. We have a constitution that protects freedom of speech as long as it does not incite violence or infringe on other people's rights. Do we believe that our freedom of expression is correctly articulated through the use of social media? Or there is still some form of censorship that happens on these platforms that we might not be aware of in South Africa?
I mean, the reality is that, like my colleague said, you know, my learned colleague said, that it's all good to be on social media, express those views, right? But at this point in time, we need action. You know, we need whatever you believe in, you need to take practical steps to address those issues, whether it's issue of allegations when it comes to vote rigging and all of that, what steps one is taking in between. But when it comes to freedom of expression, yes, I think in South Africa, we've been fortunate enough that we haven't had instances where one is complaining to say, my platform has been shut down, you know, or this is done. You know, it's only that time when you have that signal in parliament, you know.
Yes.
But at the same time, young people are expressing themselves, even older generation are expressing themselves in different platforms. There isn't much censorship, but at the same time, we must not shy away that there is manipulation in between, in terms of to what extent that certain message can go through and what that can be said. We have seen also in some instances where people are being bought to send certain messages about certain political parties, about political leaders in between, just to bring clout and actually damage who they are in between. But at the same time, we are given that space where young people can express themselves. But in between, as we're going to the elections, it's very important that we monitor those things in between. And it's a very point that he's making about the IEC also when it comes to social media. We've seen other people whom the IEC often says, one shouldn't be taking selfies, and when they're out there, one shouldn't be doing what to do. But at the same time, what are the clear guidelines when it comes to political parties and the use of social media? It's different when it comes to the regulation, in terms of that you don't have to campaign in this area, you don't have to wear a t-shirt. But when it comes to social media, during the election time, what are the regulations for those political party leaders that the IEC is bringing out there practically, and what does that mean in terms of them to know the do's and nots?
Does the IEC have a, maybe I'll point this to you, Soli, does the IEC have a clear policy on how political parties need to engage on social media, or is it a every man for themselves? We can clear out on in terms of posters, we can have a clear regulation in terms of where certain political parties can be positioned at voting stations. However, do we still have the same form of rules when it comes to this online space that is social media?
You know, I agree with Tavius. Look, we are very lucky in South Africa in that there has not been, I have never seen any sign of censor on what people can say or not. And I don't think it should be up to the IEC to tell people how to communicate. What it can comment on is if there's abuse, if there are, anyway, in case when people tell lies, when political lies tell parties still like, which they do all the time. The ANC does it all the time. I mean, Balula just said the other day that there was never load shedding, or there were never potholes in Johannesburg while the ANC was in power. Of course, that's nonsense. It's not up to the IEC or anybody else to tell them to shut up. It's not true. But it's up to us to inform ourselves and to know, to be able to make the difference between lies and the truth. What the IEC should do is make ensure that it runs clean elections. Okay, but the IEC has also been used to make it hard for some political parties to be registered. They did it to the to Action SA, it, many others. I have helped individuals by getting straight to the IEC, to individuals in the IEC to say, why are you frustrating the registration of this guy's party? You know, because that they are being told to frustrate some people's registration. That's why I am not sure that the IEC can be trusted in the area where it should be, but it's not up to it to be able to tell people what to say on social media. It's not up to it, and people should not be told what to say on social media. We are a free country, but they don't. You see, the thing is, look, I'm sitting in Switzerland because I've been speaking truth to power for a long time in South Africa, and I was hounded out, I was persecuted silently, but it comes with the territory. I mean, I take responsibility for it. So I'm sitting here because they were making my life really, really hard, but they haven't stopped me from saying the things that they want. Fortunately, they haven't. There was only one incident when a newspaper editor, a TV station editor was told to not use me because I'm too critical of the ANC. But I mean, that went away when the person was no longer there. But on what I can take, I can talk, I can use social media in any way I want. My Facebook page is very, very, very busy on social South African issues. I'm just careful that I don't say things that are not true. But I say if a truth lands on my page, in my store, and a lot of people send me stuff privately, I will put it out there on social media. And I hope that I have friends in Russia and in Iran whose government stopped them from expressing themselves on social media. I really hope that that doesn't come to South Africa.
Now, there's a fine line between censorship and regulation. Are we saying, when it comes to political campaigns, Thembiso, that we should have a free man's land on social media to avoid, you know, like Solly had mentioned, censorship that we've seen in other countries? Are we saying that we are not trusting enough that the regulation will not lead to censorship?
To some extent, I think that's that, you know, and getting to what he's saying also at this point in time, I think regulation, there should be regulation, you know. If political parties are encouraged to go out there and campaign, there should be guidelines that you say, this is where you can go. And even if you disagree with someone, there shouldn't be a perspective that you should, you know, block them and all of that, or there should be an influence. Even in among the newsroom, you know, if you think of someone as critical, there shouldn't be, as we're heading to the election, there shouldn't be, no, we're not going to use this particular analyst because this vocal and that. We need those mixed views, you know. So if he's critical of the ANC, all good, but we also need someone who'll be critical of other parties, the DA, the EFF, so that there's that mixed modes in between, so that when the viewer watch or at home or whoever's participating on those platforms, they can have a broader view in between. At the same time, we're a multi-democratic party. I mean, a country, rather, where you're looking to have different political parties. Therefore, it's very important for us to have different views in between. But I must say that there should be regulations in terms of how things are done, but not censorship at all.
Solly?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they should. I mean, regulation, we have to then maybe unpack. What do you mean by regulations, Thembiso? Sending out false news or fake news, but the things, who determines what's fake news? Because sometimes people could accuse you of I mean, I've been accused of sharing fake news when people were too lazy to actually check that it's not fake news. I'm very careful, for instance, when not to share stuff that's fake. And if something gets brought to my attention that something I've shared has been fake, I'll check it. If indeed it's fake, I will remove it from my page. It's happened one or two or twice, not many times. But I must take responsibility. Each one of us must take responsibility of what they put on social media. And if they deliberately spread falsehoods, I think that should be punishable.
You touched earlier on how a certain channel was they were informed not to use or have you on the site because of your views. Now we learned during the state or the State Capture Commission on how media was used to capture in terms of, you know, favoring certain prominent political figures, keeping quiet on certain issues, or rather finding a different way on reporting on certain matters. Moving into 2024, can we trust traditional media houses to be accurate, to be fair, and to be objective in how they report on the elections? I'll start with you, Stembis.
Well, I mean, it's no secret that different, like it's the in the US, you know what Fox News stands for, you know what they believe in and all of that. And I think in our country, we come from a different space. You know, we had another channel which was, promoting a certain narrative. You know, we have a diverse media. I think Media Freedom, we have it in the country. And in the past, we would have those publications who will have their own editorial alignment to say, do not vote for this particular party, and here are the reasons. And that they would justify to say, we're trying to inform the public in between. But I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful that we'll have a diverse media like we are in terms of the practice in between, that at the same time there will be those, as the political parties are gearing up for the elections, but even the editors themselves will tighten up the editorial game, you know, in terms of the newsroom, you know, making sure that there's a sense of strong editorial protocol that is being put, seasoned journalists, seasoned sub-editors, you know, so that we have proper straps that really reflect what is being said in the country. So I am hopeful. You know, I'm not saying there wouldn't be those issues. I'm hopeful because our media is vibrant. You know, it's very vibrant. But at the same time, we must not shy away that there will be those mixed views. There will be those who also are vested in the candidates, even in the outcomes, you know, not really looking to the service delivery, but simply saying we are interested who would, which party will emerge, you know. So for me, I would say the advice of, if I were to give an advice, would be let's report as it is. There shouldn't be any censorship. If there's a pothole, there is a pothole, right? And if there's an achievement that has been made, let's report it in between as it is, so that we give the viewers or the audiences a balanced views and really not censorship, but at the same time, not pushing a certain agenda that really is not in the interest of the people.
Soli?
Yeah, you know, I speak to a lot of producers because they're the ones who arrange interviews, and some hosts, some TV hosts in South Africa, and they would say, so the issue, and you give me trouble, that's my editors, my bosses don't like you because you're going to put them into political trouble, and but I don't care, I'm going to ask you these questions. So that shows people are being told you can't use this guy, and I've been told I would like to mention the stations, but I won't, because I don't want to put people into trouble. I have been told on the sidelines, and I'm not the only one. There are other people, you know, whom editors, the guys who control, who whisper into the earpieces of these hosts, I would like, that guy, are you sure you want the guy who's going to put us into trouble? Excuse me, you should allow, as Stembis has just said, allow the space for people to express themselves. Of course, and then allow different voices, get voices that present different perspectives on the same issue to be given the space to express themselves, and let the people out there decide what is more credible for them. But you can't, as an editor, be determining what voices you want to see or not. But it's still happening today.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think certain, like we just spoke now, that we have freedom of expression, part of our constitution, it's very robust, we're seeing it online, but then in the background at our traditional media houses, we still have some negotiating that has to happen in terms of what is said and what is not said. Why do we have that? Why do we still have that in 2023 in a country that is said to promote freedom of expression?
I think it's because there are people who think they're placed in those jobs to please somebody upstairs, and that's the problem. Sometimes it could be that the political bosses are not giving these instructions. It's just people second guess them. They think, if I allow this kind of discussion to be had, I'll be in trouble with the political boss. It doesn't necessarily mean the political bosses have said, you can't have this, you can't. But we also know that, say, at a station like the SABC, during state capture, there was a list of people who were commonly blacklisted. Commentators were blacklisted. The thing came out of there. And as I say, it still happens. It shouldn't be happening. I think that, we should just hope that going into 2024, there's going to be more space, more robustness. People will be allowed the space to express themselves. But we shouldn't be fooled. The things, but silencing of voices doesn't come it comes in many ways. As I say, it comes in a lot of ways. People simply don't call you out. Why is this guy not calling me anymore? And you need a voice from outside, inside, to say, no, actually, Stuart, we've been told we can't use you. That happens if you think it. So we mustn't trust too blindly. And I think it's important that people use social media, owned media spaces. We're in this sector, we know about bought media, owned media, earned media. So social media allows the freedom for people to use to say the things they want to say without somebody else. So I can use my LinkedIn page, my Facebook page, my Twitter page. I'm less active on Twitter, honestly. But I use the platforms that I use to say things that I know might not be allowed on formal media platforms because people are too afraid to embarrass their bosses.
That's really interesting. I think for me, at the same time, like you correctly said, we must not forget the voter. I think it's very important that as a voter, have an aerial view in terms of what is it that you need immediate as in terms of service delivery and what interest to you. Secondly, verification, right? It's very important to verify what's being posted on social media. Just look into the, don't just share. Don't just share content that you're not verified. Verified that journalists were credible there. I strongly believe. Look into the source. And in between, just check in between, making sure that whatever information that is being there is verified. As much as we encourage that people must be active on social media to express themselves, to give tip-offs, to complain or bring solutions. But we still need that active citizen when it comes to verification, but also coming up with solutions. It would be nice to say, I as a voter in 20 what I'm proposing that this particular political party should be putting these interventions in between rather than only complaining in between. It would be nice. I believe young people have nice ideas. It's very important for them to also come up there to simply say, this is what we think should be done, as there are those calls that there should be a mixed, generational mix when it comes to leadership.
Lastly, gentlemen, what can we learn from different countries and how presidential candidates have navigated the social media space? I mean, we remember with the Trump campaign was Make America Great Again. I don't quite remember Joe Biden's campaign election on social media that much, but what can we remember or what can we learn rather from these different countries and how they've utilized social media?
I think let's start in Africa, right? We should not censor people. You have seen how political leaders from other countries are really hostile, where literally they can come into your house, they say, Kamu, you're in this particular house, we're going to just come and arrest you because of you expressing yourself. We have seen with the Zimbabwean journalist, Hopewell, who has suffered a lot because of how he has been expressing himself. But at the same time, we've seen in the US, where the political party leaders are available not only on election time, they are just consistent throughout. We've seen Joe Biden when he was celebrating his tenure in power, where he was reflecting on the things that he has managed to do in terms of infographics, in terms of timelines, in terms of before and after. That for me on its own, it's just showing the power of social media to simply say it's very important for you to go back and reflect. So I think those are some of the lessons that we should be looking into. If there's an issue of the water in Guyana, and the promises, interventions being made, 2024, let's go back there and say before and after. Let's keep that consistent in between.
Let's show the progress.
Let's show the progress. So the politicians, they shouldn't only be available on social media when it comes to elections. They see the progress, they just be consistent. So mine is that, and also at the same time, let us be mindful of the third forces, those who might have interest in our country, and of course, sending certain messages, manipulating how social media is used in between. So I think those are some of the lessons that we should then, of course, making sure that we learn from in between.
Before I go to Soli, do we think the third forces that we're mentioning, not by name, but...
Yes, Soli would know them.
The third forces we are mentioning, have they taken on social media in a big part in terms of swaying the voter sentiment, or are they still in our what our big companies and our political parties, but have they moved to social media and we're not aware of it?
They have. You know, it's no secret. They have moved into social media. They, of course, they might be using different names. They've been using different faces. We've seen also with the unrest, you know, where people were told, you need to go to this place, do this, you know, protest in between. So it's slowly infiltrating. You know, we must not shy away that there are those people who are making, taking advantage of those who maybe are vulnerable, you know. So we're slowly but surely, we're seeing that in between. And that's why I'm simply saying, have an aerial view in what you're seeing, what you come across on social media, so that you're able to make an informed decision.
Soli?
Yeah, absolutely correct. And I also like to what Sembis just said about politicians needing to avail themselves. But in Africa, we have to fight. We don't see it in South Africa, but in other countries in Africa, people are afraid to communicate on social media. I have friends in Rwanda who are afraid even to communicate certain things, especially when they touch on politics, even on LinkedIn. I mean, like LinkedIn messages, necessarily, I don't know who's watching us. I can't say, talk about stuff like that. We should hope that it never comes to South Africa, but we should also not underestimate the closeness of the Russians to the ANC. Yes, they could be active on social media already, preparing minds. You know, the thing with human minds, you can manipulate very easily by repeating a lie over and over again. In South Africa, if you repeat a lie over and over again, it becomes truth for some people. We should. It's very interesting that I don't remember Biden's slogan, but it's true that you have to be present. You have to come up with an amazing slogan out there and excite people about it, but it has to be backed up by real action. You can't just on social media say fancy things when in real life there's nothing to show of it. I think that's a challenge that's going to face a number of political parties, especially the ANC, which is the one really on the back foot, because everybody's trying to gang up to remove the ANC from power. In South Africa, it's going to, I don't know, come up with something. That's why it's so important for them to sort out the energy issue before 2024, because if we find ourselves in 2024 with the current crisis in energy, the ANC will have nothing to say.
And what do you think we should learn from other countries, either be it other African countries or in Europe where you are?
I think we should learn to use to express our views. We should learn to even defend the freedoms that we have. I mean, the freedoms that we have in South Africa, we all know so many sacrifices have been made for them, for us to have them. We should keep pushing back. We should keep speaking truth to power. We should keep saying to the ANC or to others, this far, no further. We should protect the diversity of views. We're not going to agree on anything, but I think we should also place what's good for South Africa at the center of everything we do. We might not agree on how to solve certain problems, but we must agree that South Africa is sacred. This is the only South Africa we have. We have to defend it, and we have to actively participate in the elections. There are people who have woken up one day to find that the freedoms they thought they had were taken away overnight by the politicians in power. We should never get to a point where in South Africa that sort of thing happens.
This might be a risky question, but hey, we're almost done. Are you coming back to vote?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I people keep asking me, am I gone forever? I'm not gone forever. I'm gone indefinitely. But the truth is, you know, returning to South Africa now is almost like coming back to the house I shared with my abusive lover. The abusive lover is still in the house. I may miss some of the parties we held and some of it, but the abusive lover is in South Africa. I can't. And I teach at the EU Business School. My students are, as I said, they're sitting around the world in different time zones. There's no way that I can come back to South Africa and continue this job with the power crisis happening. I would lose the job. There's no doubt about it. So I will return to South Africa to vote next year. There's no doubt about it. And I'll continue to be part of the voices leading to 2024. I won't stop.
Yeah, before that, I'm sorry, because you're the host. Yeah, I just want to ask you a question, though. As much as we have identified the problems and the challenges that we South Africans face, but particularly those South Africans who are abroad. You'll recall the likes of Felicia Mabuza, were asked by the former president, the late one, Nelson Mandela, to come back as they were rebuilding the country as part of her contribution. Now, the question that I want to ask you then is, what are South Africans doing out there to at the same time to still bring hope, right? Correct. Remember, we are South Africans. We still have to be patriotic in terms of that. What is it that are South Africans outside there, beside the challenges? What is it that they're saying to still aspire people to come to the country? But most importantly, what solutions are they suggesting, proposing to the country? Because that on its own, for me, I think it's very important to say, at the end of the day, Soli is a South African, and we still need your expertise in the country.
Look, there are people who are giving, who are sending money to South Africa. I mean, people in the diaspora do different things to play the role the best way they can. There are people who fund students, who feed families. There are people who are organizing also in their own ways. I'm not just speaking truth. I've been speaking truth to power for too long. It's tiring. At some point, you need to say, okay, how do you date your ends? I am working with many diverse South Africans on something that will hopefully be launched one of these days to contribute to change. As I say, if the ANC stays in power strongly in 2024, I'm probably not going to return, okay, to South Africa. There's no way that I can return under a strongly ANC-led South Africa. That's the truth. So I am hoping, and not just hoping and talking, but contributing to my best ability to strengthen
people
who are working for change.
You'd return to a coalition government, perhaps? Because that's what analysts are saying we're likely to head.
Coalition governments are inevitable. There will be a coalition government next year. That's the reality. I think what we need to see happen in South Africa are clear guidelines on how to run coalitions. I think the current practice now is for people to run past the electoral line and then start saying, okay, how much do you get? How much do you get? What position do you want? What position do you want? As you see in Johannesburg, Gauteng, Ekurhuleni, and other places, that's not the way it should be. That's what we're pushing for. We're pushing for pre-electoral pacts. There's got to be clear guidelines ahead of elections, not after the elections, to say, okay, this is how. But we must also, it mustn't just be about who gets what. It should be what are we offering to the people of South Africa? What are we offering to inspire those people who have given up on voting? Because they need to come out and vote. They need to, but they have to be given something that will make them believe in an idea of South Africa again. And right now, there's no leader, including Ramaphosa, who's able to stand on a moral high ground like Mandela was able to and speak to all South Africans, irrespective of what party they belong to, and give them inspiration that we can make it. Because I truly believe in South Africa with the entire being that I am. I believe in South Africa. But like every brand or any brand, all brands are led. They have to be led by credible people. South Africa is not being led by credible people, and it hurts. And the values are all over the place. When the fish rots at the head, like South Africa is, then the rot goes throughout the whole body. The cancer metastasizes. So we need leadership. We need values. We need to be clear about the vision. Where are we going with this country? And if you don't have leadership to lead that journey, then it goes in all different directions.
Interesting views.
I'd like for you guys to connect with us on social media and give us your views in terms of the impact social media has on our elections. That's all we have for today's episode. I'd like to thank my guests for your input. And until next time, Nisalengahle.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Ufahamu Africa. You can find more episodes, show notes, and transcripts on our website, ufahamuafrica.com. This podcast is produced and managed by Megan DeMint, with help from production assistants Chukwufunanya Ikechukwu, Alex Kozak, and Ami Tamaklo. Our non-resident podcast fellows are Bamba Njaye, Maseke Rioba, Takono Priscilla Sempere, and Kamohelo Tanyiko Toledi. We are generously supported by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and receive research assistance from Cornell University and the University of California, Riverside. Our music is courtesy of Kevin McLeod. Until next week, Safiri Salama.